Welcome to Family History Genealogy Made Easy. I'm your host, Lisa Louise Cook. You probably have a lot of curiosity about your family history, but not a lot of time. And that's why I created this podcast. In each episode, I'm going to give you the tools that you need to uncover your family tree in quick and easy ways. Did you know that there is a gem of a genealogical resource right in your own backyard? Well, at least in your own neighborhood, and also in just about every neighborhood where your ancestors lived. The public library is one of the most underestimated sources of genealogical information around, but in today's episode, we are going to change all that. I have invited Patricia Van Skyke, manager of the History and Genealogy Department of the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County, to join us here on the podcast. In this episode, she's going to give us the inside scoop on the unique genealogical resources that are tucked away in public libraries just waiting to be discovered.
Each library does often have unique materials, particularly as they relate to their local areas. And what I think is really exciting about this is these resources are often things that you can't find anywhere else, that you can't find them on the web especially.
She'll give us tips for prepping for our visit.
We have lots of people that arrive at our library with books already identified that they want to look at, or call numbers in hand. Certainly, even if you don't do that, you should at least have an idea of, you know, what ancestors are you going to be looking for, the types of sources, the types of questions that you're going to need to find the answer out to.
And getting the most out of the online library catalog.
And also don't use the word genealogy, because you will either get a gazillion hits, many that are not related to what you're looking for, or you'll miss things that are important because the person cataloging the book called it lots of things, but they didn't call it genealogy.
And Patricia will help us formulate the right questions to get the answers that we're looking for.
What bogs some libraries down is when the question is, you know, can you help me find my dear Aunt Tilly?
Yeah.
You know? But if you're just asking us our hours and basically our operating procedures and things that you should know about, I mean, I would expect a very quick turnaround on that.
So dust off your library card and grab your book bag, and let's head off to the library right after this. Are you looking for a way to get even more genealogy gems that will power boost your research, inspire your creativity, and give you the motivation that you need to tackle that brick wall? Well, become a Genealogy Gems Premium member. You'll get two extra members-only episodes every month, packed with great information that you can use right away, an instructional video series walking you through the best internet tools step-by-step. Our current series is called Google, a Goldmine of Genealogy Gems, and in each episode, you can follow along with me as I show you online how to get the most out of Google. If you enjoy the Genealogy Gems podcast, then you're going to love being a premium member. But don't just take my word for it. Here's what your fellow podcast listeners have to say.
This is Melissa Barker in Tennessee. I'm just calling to let you know how much I'm enjoying your Genealogy Podcast Premium Edition. I especially love the handwriting analysis with Paula Sassy, and all the tips and information that you give is just so wonderful. I would encourage anyone to become a member of your Genealogy Gems Podcast Premium.
To become a premium member and start reaping the benefits right away, go to genealogygems.tv and click the Join Today button. And by entering the special coupon code SAVE20, that's SAVE20, you will get 20% off the annual membership. Genealogy Gems Premium Membership. It's where you belong. I first met Patricia Van Skyke when I interviewed her for the Family Tree Magazine podcast, a monthly podcast that I also host, and I was really impressed with her expertise and enthusiasm. So I've really been looking forward to having her on this podcast series. Patricia manages one of the largest genealogy collections in the country, housed at the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County. She's also an author, a web developer, conservator, curriculum leader for distance learning classes, and trustee of the Ohio Genealogical Society. And she also lectures widely on the topics of urban immigration and census research, as well as genealogical librarianship. Patricia holds master's degrees in history and library science and is a graduate of the National Institute of Genealogical Research. In this first episode, Patricia gives us an overview of the unique collections that we may uncover in our visit to the public library. Well, Patricia, thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast.
I'm happy to be here, Lisa. Hi.
Hi. You were the first person I thought of when I thought about wanting to talk about public libraries and how genealogists can use public libraries for their research, because you've been a guest on the Family Tree Magazine podcast, and I know that you have some terrific collections there in Cincinnati. But one of the first things that struck me when I was talking to you in that interview was that each library seems to kind of have its own unique benefits and collections. And sometimes we forget, we tend to think of public libraries in one overview idea. Oh, you go and there's reference materials and there's whatever books they have. But some of the collections are really unique and can be really valuable to genealogists, as well as the fact that they're not always unique just to that area. So I wanted to just talk with you first to kind of help people get a feel for this, about the unique benefits that a researcher can get at a public library. And you being there in the genealogy department, I thought maybe you could kind of give us a sense of what the genealogist can look for.
Surely. So I think you make a wonderful point when you say that libraries are very different and they don't all look the same. They, you know, are different sizes, have different resources, different populations that they serve. And each library does often have unique materials, particularly as they relate to their local areas. And what I think is really exciting about this is these resources are often things that you can't find anywhere else, that you can't find them on the web especially. So when you go to these libraries, you're going to literally stumble across some things that you haven't seen elsewhere. Some of the things include city directories, which are available all online and are available in microfilm at other libraries, but there's no one place to date where you can find one comprehensive set of city directories. Maps are another example of resources that, again, are not very well represented outside a particular local area. So you can find land ownership maps and lots of information that can really help you. And then I think something that almost every library, large or small, has is some kind of an obituary index. And it may be a card file still. It might be something pretty sophisticated online with lots of different search functions. But again, something that's been developed in-house that's very special to that library's collection can be just a terrific boon to genealogists. The other thing is that public libraries are big fans of partnerships. So they often have partnerships with things like local historical societies, local genealogical societies. In fact, sometimes those organizations are actually housed in the library itself. In our case, our local genealogical society doesn't even have a library. They just give all of the books that come their way to us. And all of their publishing material, again, comes through us. So we are, in effect, the Genealogical Society library, as well as our own public library collection. Another thing that a lot of libraries, large or small, have the ability to do is partner with other organizations. For example, we're part of something in Ohio that's called OPLIN, which is the Ohio Public Library Information Network. And by virtue of the fact that we are an Ohio public library, we can get subscription databases to special newspaper indexes and things like that that either a person at home would not be able to subscribe to, or they would not be able to subscribe to it in an affordable sort of way. I think Heritage Quest is a good example of that. People can get that at home if they go through a public library website sometimes, but it's something that's only available to public libraries. And more we are seeing databases that are saying, we're not going to market directly to the customers. We're going to use a public library as sort of our clearinghouse. So in a sense, the public library, whether you're talking about physically coming in, and I hope that I give you enough reasons to have people physically come in, or going online, that the public library is still the portal. And if people are just trying to go out and Google or do something or hit one commercial database that they've subscribed to, they're going to be missing an awful lot of things.
Oh, I think you have given a tremendous amount of inspiration for why we should visit the public library. And you know what really comes to mind as you're talking about all of these unique resources is that oftentimes we go to our own public library. I know in my area, they actually have a genealogy room, and they have books on all the different states and everything. So, you know, I've kind of scoured through that. But really what you want is you've got to tap into the public library in each location where you're researching. And we don't always think of that. We might look at them online, but we don't really think about making the visit that when we go to that area finally to do some research, we've got to stop in at the public library and ask about those unique resources. Like you mentioned, city directories, and you're absolutely right. There is no one clearinghouse. So it's good to know that public libraries may have and there may just be a smattering, right? It's not necessarily that you would have a comprehensive collection. You're going to have whatever has come your way that you've had room to store, right?
Well, it depends again on the size of the library and who the library defines as their audience. In our particular library, because, you know, we're a very large national collection, we will collect city directories perhaps on microfilm from anywhere. In fact, we aggressively go out and search for that. Oh. But really at a bare minimum, most small libraries, even the small libraries, will attempt to collect all of the city directories of their particular area. So you can often expect and have good luck in finding nearly everyone that was published for that particular area.
Oh, that's terrific. So while you may not have yet obtained every single year, at least we know that that is oftentimes a focus, and that if anybody's going to have them, chances are the public library in that region would have them. And then you mentioned partnering with genealogy societies. And again, it made me think of a local library here that's just in the next county over. And that genealogy society does not have its own location. They meet in somebody else's building. And so all of their reference material happens to be in the local library. And that's, again, something that I wouldn't always necessarily think of. And it's not necessarily the case for every library, right?
Right. Exactly. Some will have separate organizations or separate buildings and all of that. But another thing that, again, usually you see a lot of cooperation between the public libraries and genealogical societies, even if they are completely separate in terms of their space collection and so on. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is that one of the resources, and I imagine we'll talk more about this in detail as well, that the library has to offer is the level of expertise that we can offer. And again, public libraries, large and small, tend to often offer genealogy programs, and they can be everything from beginning, how to get started, to very advanced and very specialized resources. And we see that more and more people are coming in the door, not just to look at our books on the shelves, but they want to know more about how to do cemetery research or how to research passenger lists. And that's something that, again, we've been able to partner with the Genealogical Society here because we can't always afford to bring in, you know, a big name national speaker to talk on some very specialized topic. But when we partner with a couple of organizations in town, including the Genealogical Society, we have more places to sort of underwrite the cost of that.
Sure.
And then, of course, our librarians are very expert in and of themselves, so they often offer some of the programs as well.
Well, and you're absolutely right. That is something that I want to cover in our next segment is how to make the most of the in-house visit, how to prepare for it, how to tap into the folks that are there. But before we end this segment, I wanted to ask you, from the standpoint of a public library, is it unique to each library how committed they are to the local history and genealogy, or is that something that's encouraged at the national level for all libraries to look at that as a focus area?
I would say it's very grassroots. So it's a decision that's made on each library, and it's not necessarily something that is pushed from the top or from a national organization. And I think also libraries just being pretty democratic in nature, they're, especially public libraries, they're looking at what their constituents want. So they wouldn't, even if a national organization was saying every public library should have a genealogy collection, they wouldn't necessarily be paying as much attention to that as they would be paying attention to what their local constituents want. Now, that being said, almost across the board, local constituents want genealogy and local history. In fact, I was speaking to somebody last week from the Ohio Department of Transportation who had worked on a local tax levy for a library. And he said the levy went through the first time and it didn't pass. So they had to go back to the taxpayers and give it another try, and they tweaked it. And one of the things that they did is they said, if you pass this levy, we will give you more genealogical resources. And the levy passed easily. His claim is that they spoke to something that the customers were truly interested in. And
yeah.
I think you see that a lot.
Well, that's a good thing to keep in mind as genealogists in our local area, is to go in and talk to the reference desk, let them know what we're looking for and what our interests are, and even volunteer and get involved if we want to see more of those kind of resources, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did want to say just a few other plugs for libraries, too, of course, is that the public libraries tend to have better hours than you can find just about any place, government or private organizations, and, of course, they're free, so they don't charge admission. So those are two things that hopefully would be added enticement.
We'll be right back with more from Patricia Van Skyk on public libraries right after this.
We're back, and I'm your host, Lisa Louise Cook. In our second segment, Patricia is going to help us prepare to get the most out of our visit to the public library. Can you give us some ideas of when we finally get lucky and we know we can make a trip, let's say, to a region or a state or a area where our ancestors come from, and obviously it's an investment of time and money, we want to get the most out of our visit to the local public library. You've certainly made the case that we would be amiss to not stop by that local public library and see what they have because collections are so unique. So what can we do before we leave home to make sure that we're going to get the most out of that visit?
Sure, that's really important because when you're here, you want your time to be well used. So the first thing that I would recommend is to do as much advanced preparation as possible. And that might even be looking up what some of the resources that you might want to use. We have lots of people that arrive at our library with books already identified that they want to look at, or call numbers in hand. Certainly, even if you don't do that, you should at least have an idea of, you know, what ancestors are you going to be looking for, the types of sources, the types of questions that you're going to need to find the answer out to. So, for example, if you're stuck, you don't have a death date on a particular ancestor, then you might want to be making a note of that sort of thing. Most libraries do have online catalogs now, again, whether they're large or small. And so if you can go to a library's website, the very first thing that I would recommend that you do is to explore their online catalog and see what kind of resources you think might be helpful to you. And when you do that, what you want to do is you want to look at the geographic area that you're going to be searching, not the person's surname. So I wouldn't put in Van Skyke in the Cincinnati Public Library's online catalog. If I did, I would get one hit. But there might be lots and lots of resources like marriage records from the 1880s in Hamilton County. So instead, I would want to look at Cincinnati or Hamilton County or Boston or whatever the geographical area is and get a sense of the resources that are there. So for example, again, that person whose death date you were looking for, you believed him to be in this particular location in a particular span of years. And when you put that geographic term in, you see that there's something that's called death certificates or death notices from the 1870s, and you're thinking, okay, well, that would be a possibility because, you know, that's in the window of time when he might have died. So this would be a book that I would want to look at when I go to the library. A couple of other things that I would really recommend is that if there's the opportunity to do an advanced search, to use that. And not because you have to be so advanced to use the advanced search, but often the advanced search lets you specify things a little bit more clearly, and sometimes the functionality of that just works better. And also don't use the word genealogy, because you will either get a gazillion hits, many that are not related to what you're looking for, or you'll miss things that are important because the person cataloging the book called it lots of things, but they didn't call it genealogy. So I would strike that word from your vocabulary when you're doing a catalog search. The other thing that I would recommend you doing, and this is something that it really sort of surprised me before I started taking an in-depth look at cataloging, to discover that on a library's website, they usually have a website, and then they usually have something that you can link to the catalog. But there's lots of things that are on that website that are not in the catalog. So, for example, there might be an obituary index that's on the website but not in the catalog. There might be microfilm collections or certain magazines that would be helpful to you that are on the website. There might even be city directories that have already been digitized that you could look at and then not spend your time looking at them when you go to the library and look at something else. And those, again, might be on the website but not in the catalog. So make sure that you don't just jump straight to the catalog. Some libraries even have what are known as genealogy rooms on their website. And what they've done is they've pulled together all kinds of resources that would be of interest to genealogists, but not necessarily all gathered together in the catalog. So be sure and look both places or all places on the website.
That's such a great point, because that has changed a lot, even in the last 5 years. I think when libraries first started coming online, it was all about just trying to get your catalog online. But nowadays, it's really a website. It's a website for the area, for the library itself. And as you say, to keep in mind that things like databases, because you are really putting online more actual resources. I've noticed some libraries are putting on digital image collections and things that go well beyond what you would find in the catalog. So using that website as a resource, just like we would any other genealogical resource, right?
Exactly. And then the other thing that, and again, you can usually do this straight from the website or pick up the phone if you're not real technologically inclined, but absolutely you should contact the library in advance. And you might even want to just make sure that the website is up to date. Are the hours that are listed there, the days that they're open?
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
You know, where should you park your car? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the best time of the day of the week to come? Are things like extraordinarily busy on Saturday and Sunday and you're not going to get as much individual help? Things like, is the library Wi-Fi? So should you bring, you know, your laptop in and expect that you can also get a signal to, you know, be able to do multiple levels of searching? Things like, do you need change to feed photocopy machines, or do you buy a copy card? You know, are there any special collections that you should know about? Or maybe they even do orientations. Maybe the first hour of every day or every Wednesday they do an overall orientation to the department. And so that might help you decide, like, well, gee, I think I'll start my research trip on this day and I'll start with an orientation. And if you're traveling with a group, some libraries will even make special accommodations for a group.
Mm-hmm.
Do a tour and they'll tailor it to the particular interest of your group, or they might have a meeting room that they can set up for you to eat your lunch or do your research or whatever. So, again, I think that libraries are very much about trying to tailor the needs of the customer to what they can offer them. So I would suggest, you know, contacting the library and getting all of that information in advance.
And it's a small investment in some time and maybe a few dollars on a long-distance phone call just to make sure that you're going to get the most out of the time that you spend there. You know, everything you were describing is what I think about when I'm planning a trip to the Family History Library in Salt Lake City. But really, it's applicable to any time you travel to go to visit a public library. And I've noticed, too, that oftentimes I can send an email if I give them some time. You know, if I go a week or two in advance and I send an email to the library and maybe ask some of those questions, oftentimes they're more than happy to email back and just reconfirm, yep, that's correct, and this is what you need, and by the way, you know, maybe you should bring your digital camera to take some photographs of things. And don't you find that this case, that do you get swamped with emails, or can we expect that we would be able to get a response?
Oh, at our library, you would get a response, and I think at most you would. I mean,
yeah.
I think what bogs some libraries down is when the question is, you know, can you help me find my dear Aunt Tilly?
Yeah.
You know? But if you're just asking us our hours and basically our operating procedures and things that you should know about, I mean, I would expect a very quick turnaround on that. You know, in most cases, I would think in a day or two you should get a reply back.
And if we found something either in the catalog or on the website, or we're not seeing what we're looking for, we could probably email ahead to ask, might you have something in this area or that area, so that you can know whether it's worthwhile bringing materials, you know, for that kind of research or not. And you guys could at least you can confirm for us whether or not you have those kinds of resources.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think the reference librarian is a very underutilized person in the library. I found that the gal that I've seen at our public library, she's just so willing to sit down or help me come and track down a particular item or whatever. And oftentimes you guys have just the experience of being in that library and all the questions you've heard that can sometimes bring to light an answer that isn't written down anywhere, right?
That's right. And that's one of the things that I really want to emphasize, is that the librarians don't just know the collection, but they know research strategy and methodology, and they know what's inside a particular book, too. So, you know, somebody is looking for something, you might think an obvious place would be, you know, this, you know, again, you know, if I'm going back to this, you know, looking for the death notice of somebody, you might think this book on 1870s, death notices is the place to go for that.
Mm-hmm.
But a librarian might know that indeed that particular book didn't really have that much information. But if your ancestor was German, there's a German cemetery that covers German deaths better than any other source, better than any newspaper, any death record or whatever. And so just talking with the reference librarian and library ease, we call that the reference interview.
Okay.
then, you know, we can help you get to the right source and tell you how to use that source, and even help you with your brick walls, or say how to integrate the various sources. We'll often say to somebody, now, this book right here will give you this. And what you'll want to do is you'll want to look for this particular information in this book. And when you have that information, come back to us, and we can use that to then go to four or five other different sources once you have that out of this book or this map or this city directory or whatever.
So we really need to not be thinking about the folks who are in the library as someone who's going to help with the, you know, our individual research. What we really want to do is tailor our questions to say, knowing what we know about what we're trying to find, tapping into their knowledge of what they have and what might match up. So, you know, it's interesting because sometimes we, like you say, you want to say, well, what about Great Aunt Tilly? When in reality, the real gems that you guys have in your knowledge and in your databases is what the library can offer, how to find it, and which items will and won't perhaps answer those kinds of questions. I think that's such a great way to go in with that mindset.
And also, even though I said to go ahead and identify some sources, because of course that's helpful, you know, again, don't think that, you know, well, I found this book on 1870s death and that's it. Or to phrase a question, now hopefully the librarians can look beyond phraseology, but sometimes we'll have people come in and say, do you have death certificates for this particular year? And the answer to that question may be no, but we have other ways that we can find the death information. And hopefully a librarian will not take you at your word and just say yes or no. Say, no, but we have this. But really the better way to ensure that somebody isn't a mind reader and all of that, again, is to pose it in terms of a query. Like, I'm trying to find when this person died. I think it was about this time period. And then that sort of opens the door to the librarian to be able to probe with you all of the wide variety of sources instead of narrowing the question down too quickly.
Great suggestion. You know, I love bringing these genealogical gems to you that help boost your research and build a strong family tree. And it's important to me to always have free podcasts available so that everyone can participate. If you enjoy these free shows and you would like to help me cover the costs of bringing them to you each week, there's a really easy way to do that that won't cost you a thing. By coming to my website at genealogygems.tv whenever you need to do some shopping online and accessing your favorite stores and websites through the links that you find on my site, you financially support the show. The price you pay is exactly the same, but Genealogy Gems receives a small percentage for referring you. It's just that simple. Amazon is one of my all-time favorite places to shop online. They have just about everything and at incredibly competitive prices. So next time you're looking for books, DVDs, software, electronics, apparel, pretty much anything at all, head to genealogygems.tv and click the Amazon ad that you find on the homepage or throughout the website, and these free podcasts will benefit by any shopping that you do. And you will get the same super low prices. Everybody wins. So if you enjoyed the Genealogy Gems podcast and the Family History Genealogy Made Easy podcast, let your mouse do the shopping through the ads and links on the Genealogy Gems website, and together we'll keep new episodes coming for a long time to come. Well, that brings us to the end of the show, but we've just gotten started at finding those genealogical gems that are waiting for us at public libraries. In our next episode, you'll learn more about how to think like a librarian and tap into their unique local knowledge and collections. Patricia covered a lot of great ideas and research tips in this episode, and you'll find them all listed for you in the show notes. To view the show notes, just go to genealogygems.tv and click the yellow Family History podcast icon, and then click on podcast episode number 34. And I invite you to listen to my other family history podcast called Genealogy Gems, which you can also find at my website at genealogygems.tv.
And here's a heads up. I am preparing a very special episode of Family History, Genealogy Made Easy, and it might just be starring you. I'll be devoting an entire episode to listener emails and questions, and I want to include yours. So email me at genealogymadeeasy@gmail.com, and you may just have your comments or questions read on the air. Here's a final thought for today. J.A. Langford once said, "The only true equalizers in the world are books. The only treasure house open to all comers is a library. The only wealth which will not decay is knowledge. The only jewel which can carry beyond the grave is wisdom." Thanks so much for listening, friend. I'm Lisa Louise Cook, and I'll talk to you next week.